How's your bubble?
It's Economic Anxiety with Rod Oram.
Back again to our seven-part chat with Rod Oram. We're into episode two. Last time, we heard how the 2008 financial crisis came about, and now we're going to hear what happened next and what we managed to learn or not learn. And you might find out just why there was an upsurge in right-wing politics and what the heck shadow banks are. We're moving into what happened, I guess, after the initial beginning of the crisis. So did we ever get out of it? What were the effects? How are people still affected? And what have we learnt?
Globally, we went through a pretty tough period, particularly in late 2008 and late 2009, where the global financial system was freezing up. Because one bank was not quite sure what the creditworthiness was of another, because they didn't know how much of these toxic failing assets they had on their books, the interbank lending market, for one, dried up, which is really important. You know, it's about that circulation of capital and of funds. So central banks, i.e. the reserve banks in the world, had to step in a very big way, extending very big lines of credit, and then in due course, many of them, agreeing to buy bonds, initially only government bonds, off banks, and then take those bonds onto their own balance sheets, the central banks, and then crediting the banks with the money for that in their own accounts, to create that new liquidity. So that worked for a while. And of course, the other thing that went on was interest rates plunged to next to nothing, and in due course went negative. It was an extraordinary thing to have a negative interest rate in quite a few countries. In other words, the bank charges you for putting money in its care, but you've got it there because actually you need to keep money somewhere. It's really hard to physically keep money. You can buy you can collect van loads of banknotes, but then you've got to have a safe place to put them.
But the banks are also supposed to be a safe place.
Yes, they are.
And in this case, they weren't.
Some of them weren't. Particularly in the US and in the UK, and to a lesser extent in some other European countries, governments and central banks had to step in massively to support banks. So all the way through that period, there was a terrific scramble to make the global financial system safe again. And central banks had to resort to some pretty extraordinary things, like creating money, which is what the term quantitative easing means, creating money to keep the global financial system going. There was a lot of regulation put in place, better in Europe than in the United States. And so central banks and politicians learned quite a lot about that. In some economies, they languished or indeed contracted, most famously, obviously, the Greek economy, worst of all, through that period. And it was very hard to get economies, you know, growing again. The response of many governments was to cut their government spending to reduce their budget surpluses, but that then had a big impact in a number of countries on the provision of health and welfare and education and other things, you know, you name it, that governments provide. And I think the other big effect was it changed politics quite a lot. When there's a big bank crisis like that, you could expect perhaps an upsurge of support for politics of the left, which wants government to take a bigger role in the financial system, perhaps even own the banks. And you've got some of that. But fascinatingly, it was actually the upsurge in the right, because of a sense of breakdown in effectiveness of government and great cynicism about the banks and all the rest. So the political landscape has changed hugely. And so some of that is behind the Brexit, leaving the EU out for people in the UK. Obviously, immigration is a very big part of this too. But similarly in the US, yes, it is about immigration. But you can also see great disenchantment on the right. But then weirdly, and this is where in the last year or so, it's got particularly strange what's going on. Although I suppose in one sense it's no surprise. You've got the Trump administration as a pretty random sort of right-wing, chaotic government knocking out, taking away a number of the key regulatory things put in place after the global financial crisis to try to prevent another one.
That doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense at all. It's very dangerous. Then in terms, if we look at what's been happening with the financial sector globally, the first thing is you would have expected that because the global financial crisis exposed a great deal of excessive debt in many parts of the world, you'd have expected perhaps that people would have pulled back on debt. But because the central banks had massively reduced their interest rates, indeed some going negative, and there's this great amount of money that was supposed to stimulate economies, but they were sloshing around the world, debt around the world has gone up from 145% of GDP, of economic activity, in 2007 to 256% in mid-2017. So, and China is the biggest in that. Its debt has increased fivefold in the last 10 years, and it's accumulated one-third of all new global debt. And we've got different patterns, though. In some countries, households have significantly reduced their debt. Ireland, which had a terrible housing collapse, is the most spectacular. Irish households have pretty much halved their debt as a percentage of the economy. In New Zealand, we've gone up. So our households now have a record level of debt, net debt as a percentage of net income. People are getting away with that. They're managing that because interest rates are unusually low in New Zealand. But at some point, they will go back up. And at some point, people are going to be in a great deal of difficulty. Some people are going to be in a great deal of difficulty. Other things around the world is we thought that the big sort of creed occurred during the global financial crisis. Look, these banks are too big to fail. We can't let banks be this big again because look how much it costs to prop them up when things go wrong. Well, the top five banks in the U.S. now control 47% of banking assets in the U.S. versus 44% before the global financial crisis. And in the U.S. mutual funds industry, which are the people who sell you, manage funds, unit trusts, and other sorts of investment vehicles, the top 1% of them control 45% of the assets in that sector.
That's incredible.
It is. And banks are better. They are required to have more capital than they did before the global financial crisis. And they have pulled in on risk. So they're less profitable, which I think is a good thing, but they're somewhat less international. I mean, they are still very international, but the level of international lending cross borders as a percentage of the economy and other measures of financial flows between countries has pulled back a bit. But here's the thing. We've got the regulated financial system, but then we have things called shadow banks outside the regulated system. These are companies with large sums of capital which they lend out to people. So they behave like banks, but they and there is some control of them, but they're not tightly regulated, as tightly regulated as banks. So shadow banks around the world now control 13% of global financial assets, which is, roughly speaking, about twice as much as they did before the global financial crisis. So one last thing. I hesitate to read a long quote, but this is from, I think, a very wise person, who's Martin Wolf, who's the chief economics columnist for the Financial Times in London. On the 10th anniversary of Lehman Brothers' bankruptcy, Martin wrote, "So what happened after the global financial crisis? Have politicians and policymakers tried to get us back to the past or go into a different future? The answer is clear. It is the former." So in other words, we haven't really learned, we haven't really moved on, we haven't really started to create financial systems that we need now. I go back to Martin. "The financial crisis was a devastating failure of the free market that followed a period of rising inequality within many countries. Yet, contrary to what happened in the 1970s, policymakers have barely questioned the relative roles of government and markets. Conventional wisdom still considers, quote, structural reform largely synonymous with lower taxes and deregulation of labor markets. concern is expressed over inequality, but little has actually been done. Policymakers have mostly failed to notice the dangerous dependence of demand on ever-rising debt. Monopoly and zero-sum activities are pervasive. Few question the value of the vast quantities of financial sector activity we continue to have, or recognise the risks of further big financial crises.
I mean, my response to that is, does that mean that this next financial crisis, one, is because we haven't learnt from our mistakes, but two, also because it's an inevitable part of this financial system which we haven't mastered yet? And you'll have to wait until the next episode for the answer to that question.
Crisis? What crisis?
That was Economic Anxiety with Rod Oram.